folks, and welcome to Dungeon Casters, the Dungeon Master Advice Show for new DMs made by new DMs.
I'm Ben.
And I'm Scott.
And we're here to help you run your new campaign.
For those ungrateful assholes you call friends.
But you got a new bestie, this podcast. This week on Dungeon Casters, we're going to be talking about tips and tricks to help you get started on your new campaign. So, I'm the newest of the two of us. This campaign we're currently running with a group of friends of ours, including Scott, is really the first full-length campaign I've ever run. And it's only started, 6 months ago on the top end, and we've really only played...
It's only once a month.
We've only played about 5 or 6, maybe 7 times, and so I had to figure a lot of stuff out about half a year ago with experience as a player, but not a lot of experience as DM. You have way more experience than I do.
DMing well, not very long, but DMing in general, I've been going for about 6 years now. In regards to the grand scheme of things, I'm still pretty new to this as well. Just started at 3.5, which a lot of people think is pretty new.
Yeah. Well, relative to how long the game's been around, it is pretty new. And I think that's worth saying is that both of us really started playing at 3.5. We played 3.5 a lot. We played through 4 very briefly, as it seems everybody did. And now we've been playing 5 for a while, and we'll get into that on another episode. But we want to talk about some of the things that have been most helpful to us as new DMs and as striving to get better DMs. Things we wish we'd known going in, things we learned along the way, things that have been most helpful in general. So, what's something that you found to be most critical?
The first most important thing I ever learned from a couple years of DMing was, everyone's on the same team.
Yeah.
Dungeon Master, players, everyone, you're all a bunch of friends getting together to tell a dope-ass fantasy story, and there's none of this DM versus the players nonsense where it's like, oh, let's see how quickly I can kill everyone, grind up their characters, and make them re-roll.
I know, it's really common, it seems, that DMs who go in, they say, like, this is my story, I'm going to tell this story, my players are characters in my story, and not only would I say that's the wrong way to go into the game, it's actually, I found in practice, the reverse of what actually seems to be the truth. The DM, and it's easy to slip into that, right? Because the DM will make the maps, or at least participate in making the maps, whether they're from somewhere else or you made them yourself. The DM will write the story. The DM is oftentimes the only one bothering to look through any of the books. So you have all the information, all the statistics, you pick the monsters, you pick the people, you build the NPCs, you run the conversations. You know, you do a lot of work, and so it's very easy to step into the author role.
Yeah.
But this isn't writing a book.
No.
This isn't writing a screenplay. This is running a game.
And that's the important thing to remember. It's a game at the end of the day. You're trying to have fun with your friends. You're trying to, yes, you're creating a narrative, you're creating a story, but it's something that you're doing together with a group of people. And,
right.
You know, as you mentioned before, like, it might start off as, you know, the DM writing everything, the DM making all these NPCs,
yeah.
And making all these monsters and plot points, but the story becomes the characters very quickly.
Yeah, it's very true, and it's the sooner you are willing to give over the reins to the players, more than you think you should be able to, really the happier you're ultimately going to be. I mean, because remember, the DM kind of has a thankless role. That said, at least the DMs that I know, you and I mostly, we get thanked quite a bit for the work we do, but in terms of how much you do versus how much will get done is a pretty kind of upsetting ratio at first. I know that it's a lot of work in the back room for about 10% of it to show up. But and we'll talk about that in a minute, but I think the point is it's very important to remember that you're running a game. And you have to remember what the point of a game is. The point of a game is to have fun, and that means everybody, not just you.
And, yeah, although you are, you know, running the game, it is a communal effort. You are crafting a narrative, and the real point that I see in DMing, and when I'm, you know, DMing a campaign and running something and creating something, is trying to make an experience that my friends will enjoy. Like, if I wanted to create a narrative that just satisfies me, I'd write a book, but that's not what I'm doing. I'm writing a story that's going to interest my friends, that's going to encourage them to perform and play in these roles of these characters, and that's what's, you know, most crucial for a GM or a DM or whatever you want to call it, like, creating a narrative that your friends are going to have fun in. And, yeah, sometimes that, well, actually most of the time, that means being antagonistic and, you know, creating conflict and creating something for your players to overcome. But at the same time, it's important to realize that you want them to overcome that. You want them to succeed, because that's when the game is fun, when they accomplish something. Not easily, but when they are able to, you know, fight for something and, you know, reach a goal that you've set forth for them.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I think that goal thing's really important, and I think that it's also, it can sometimes be misleading with what the game is. It's a fantasy role-playing RPG, or a lot of RPGs are, you know, whatever they are, RPG, and you think that's very open, and when you're the DM, you'll often realize that the openness is kind of an illusion, and you think, like, well, I can give them the illusion of this, I can take it, I can do all these things, and your players will want to feel that way, and you'll realize very soon that there's a lot of walls that have to be put up. They can be widely spread walls, but there's going to be walls. But even so, it's not your job to enforce those walls so much as it's your job to, within the best of your ability, shift the walls to where your players want to walk. Because, like I said, it is about having fun. And unfortunately, your role kind of means you have to take the hit on the fun. If other people are having fun in the group, if you have four players in your group, and four of them are not having fun, and you are having fun, another...
You're kind of an asshole.
And I think that it sucks sometimes to think, like, I have to be the one not having any fun, but I think that there's two parts. One, yeah, sometimes that's just your job. You know, you're running the game. You're the calculator behind everything. So sometimes your job really isn't fun. But I think it's important to remember that because that's your job, you have to learn to, or maybe you naturally do, get joy out of bringing the other people joy. You don't really sign up because you want to have the most fun at the table.
Yeah, you sign up because you are willing to take the punishment. There are very few GMs or DMs out there that are not at least closeted, if not very outward masochists. like, in regards to, like, you know, your character's decisions, the acceptance that, you know, whatever you decide for them, option A, B, and C, planned out meticulously, 6 hours of prep, all, they're going to pick option D every single time. No matter how much you put into it, they're going to pick the one thing you didn't think of, or they're going to focus in on the one minute detail that you actually didn't care about, but they just happened to roll a really low perception check on.
Yeah, we were talking about how you could put them in a room with a big treasure chest in it, and you think, like, there's no way they're not going to check in this treasure chest. This is my story hook. Players love gold. And all it takes is they fail one investigation check on a weird slug in the corner of the room that you made up because they wanted to find something. Now they think it's magic, they think it's a trap, and before you know it, you're running a campaign about how to overcome the slug overlords. and that's just what things happen. I mean, that leads in here about planning and over-planning and how at the end of the day, most of what you have planned doesn't really matter. So, I mean, I know that for me, I was, when I started planning our campaign, I was initially very attached to the idea of planning a lot, which I pretty soon kind of threw away and started planning on much more basic and fundamental grounds. But I didn't do the thing a lot of early DMs do where they start planning out every conversation every NPC is going to have, every character trait they have, every familial tie, and for every single person the party could possibly encounter. And it's worth saying that I didn't do it because I knew early on that was something that you had done and quickly disbanded with because it was a nightmare.
The amount of richly developed NPCs that have never even been spoken to or found or even, like, acknowledged as people, it's overwhelming. And that was something I learned. Actually, it took me an embarrassingly long time to learn that you plan the story, the quest, the narrative in a very vague, open sense. Like, this is their goal, these are the steps to get this goal. In regards to the minutia of, you know, a campaign and a session and playing, I normally know which goal they're trying to accomplish that day and have in my pocket, like, a bunch of generic, reskinnable encounters that
sure.
I can throw in at any point. So,
sure.
You know, yes, they're going to this town to find this one scholar who might know about the thing they're looking for. And I don't have anything planned about this town. I haven't even thought about this town yet, but this is where they decided to go, because of course this is where they decided to go. So I have in my back pocket just generic, guard introductions at the front gates that could work at any city, generic kind of interactions with, you know, street urchins or merchants or traveling performers or just things that would show up in a city. So that way you can populate these areas in a rich and kind of, you know, a way that enthralls your characters, but also not have to kill yourself planning 6 hours for every single town, settlement, city, or dungeon these people step into.
Right, you can't do it at the end of the day, because even if you manage, right, to write everything down, and you have it all in this binder that's the size of, like, a thesaurus, the trouble is, even if it's there, the game is... It requires a certain speed. And if you have to sit there and find everything and read a novel just to get to the point, I mean, you basically have failed anyway. You're probably supposed to be sitting there for 20 minutes with nothing to do while you figure out where they are. And it's not worth it, and they're not going to have fun. And again, you've kind of lost the point if you're doing that. And so much of the game revolves around improv that really it's if anything, it's crippling your ability to practice that. But, I mean, to that sort of point, one of the things that I have found probably most useful, and it's not something you can necessarily prepare for, but that's kind of the magic of it, is that the players, if given sufficient quote-unquote room, will kind of run themselves. And we'll get into the sort of narrative stylings and how to do narratives in a later podcast, but... when I did the campaign and I did an adventure I just ran very recently, I had a lot written. But what I had written was background stuff, the mandatory NPCs and their interactions with each other. But it was a lot of just, I don't know, it wasn't a lot of fluff. There was a lot of just like, I know they're going to encounter this, and I've estimated more or less what they're going to do. But there are broad estimates, and within that, I say, well, if they talk to this person and want to work with this person, they'll be in conflict with this person. But how they want to do that doesn't really matter, because I've written down in broad strokes. So the most powerful thing I've found is that, really, the more I sit back and I listen to what they're talking about, the stronger the story is, the easier it is for me, and the more interested they are, because your players, when they're talking, are going to be talking about the stuff that's interesting to them. Or sometimes they'll be talking very blatantly, and sometimes, let's face it, rudely, about the things they don't find interesting. But it's more fruitful, long-term, for the fun of the game, for the story, and for the enjoyment of your players in general, to react to what they want. And just kind of adjust what you've planned out so that it fits within what they're interested in.
Yeah, exactly. You can take all of your cues from your characters in that regard, and yes, it's important to, you know, establish a direction for them, because if you just drop them in this open sandbox and you say, oh, what do you guys want to do? it ends up with, you know, the most banal and boring sessions of, like, well, we don't know where to go, we have this whole world, and, like, even in the most sandboxy of sandboxy video games, you still have quests, you still have stories, you still have ideas, so you do have to, you know, give them an inch, and then let them take a mile with it.
Yeah.
And, like, that's why it's good to have, you know, those kind of general ideas that you can fit in regardless of what direction they go. If you have options, you know, A, B, and C, you let them pick which one they want, and then kind of fit your story to go along with that. And along a similar vein, one of the other helpful things in regards to using your characters to and your players to help you with your narrative is having them establish backstories.
Oh my God, bless them. Oh. Bless a good backstory. A good backstory will save your life as a DM.
Because all you need to do when your character has a backstory is, alright, now you have the narrative. This is what this character has already established they want. This is what they're interested in. So you just link that in to your overarching quest, and that character is down to clown.
Right. down to clown.
I thought it was funny.
No, you know, it's good. The backstories are critically important. Because not only do you find what the character finds interesting, you've discovered what the player finds interesting. And it's worth noting that I did this, and I know that Scott has done this, where before the campaign's even started, I've started like a Facebook group, or I've sent out group texts or something, and I've just asked the players, like, what kind of game is interesting to you? And these backstories are a huge component of that, because if you have characters who are really interested in being like classic adventure styles with a lot of sword and sorcery, a lot of combat, a lot of combat's later. We'll get to combat. But you know, if that's what they're interested in, you have to know that in advance. And if the backstories are, you know, I was a soldier, I was a mercenary, I was a soldier of fortune, that's the same thing. That's the exact same thing. If you're any of those two things that I listed, then it's worth knowing. But if you have characters who are very, they're scholars, or they're just explorers, or they're scientists, or they're researchers, or they're just regular people with a kind of a mundane quest, your story is going to have to be different. And once you have that information, you really can do a lot of work to say, I don't have to guess anymore.
Yeah.
I just know what the player wants to do.
Well, exactly, and that brings us all the way back to the original point of it's a game, it's for fun, and if your characters are literally telling you in their backstory, this is what I'm interested in playing, this is what my character is interested in, you've already have had half the work done for you, because you already know where this character wants to go. You already know where these players want this to go. So if, you know, you have three people in your campaign that have all been affected by, like, supernatural events somehow, it's like, alright, you have a supernatural investigatory campaign. Or if you have three dudes who are mercenaries, soldiers of fortune, whatever.
any of those three completely different types of people.
Yes. then you know, like, alright, these are some battle dudes. They're gonna wanna fight some things, and they're gonna wanna get some loot from it. And
right.
I mean, that's the thing, is you tailor your adventure to your players. I mean, sometimes it's rough,
sometimes it's really rough, because sometimes they don't line up well. And you have to do a lot of work to be like, where's the link here? But you have to do that part of the work. I mean, I know that especially in our party, which is a bigger party, it is challenging to say, how do I make people who didn't know each other, who have, in all cases, like, fairly different backstories, and I'm willing to say kind of unusual ones a lot of times, like very non-standard backstory.
Or
no backstory at all in the case of one. And I've had to basically make that one up as I went along for this person. But it's difficult, and sometimes that requires slow pacing, episodic choices, saying, like, it's going to be connected just by virtue of object B just is going to happen to be where person B was, you know, and not anymore. And you know, do you have to sometimes do some, you know, do you have to hope they just go along with it for a little while? Yes, you do.
I know a lot of GMs and DMs are coy about this because they're afraid of the the big R word, don't want to be a railroader, as someone who is unashamedly a railroader, I do it all the time, especially in the beginnings of my campaigns. I will put those players on a single track and say, this is what you're doing.
Sure.
And it's a great way, I mean, the way I use it is a great way to get them introduced to the world, introduced to one another as characters. But, like, at the end of the day, you can ask your players, like, listen, is it alright if your backstory is relevant to this so I can use it in the plot? And 9 times out of 10, that character is going to be like, well, yeah, if my character's backstory all of a sudden becomes a crucial plot point, that's awesome. I'm more into that. I want to be ingrained in this plot, so it makes sense.
Yeah, and it's you have to remember that players are really self-obsessed. They're playing in a group, but everyone, by nature of the game, writes a hero. Maybe it's a very mundane hero. Maybe it's not even a good aligned hero. But they've written a significant figure. Like, a heroic figure, an anti-hero, something of note. And so they want, if they could have every second of spotlight, they would take it. But you can't do that. You can't give every single player 100% of the attention. Ideally, it would be an even split between everybody. But that means that all of the time, most of the people aren't interacting. And because you can't have every moment be super consistent with their backstory and their particular interests, you do your best to weave them together so that at least the general overarching plot appeals to them in some way. I mean, even if they're a farmer and, like, a high wizard, you know, it's saying, like, well, the threat affects you in the same way. The end result is the same. Or you're trapped. Doesn't really matter, you're different.
Yeah.
You're trapped.
And the thing with that is, your characters will, you know, in regards to letting them take the narrative, they have, you know, this hero that they've made. They want to, like you said, they want the spotlight. They want their character to be known and shown. But also, they are interacting not only with you, they're interacting in character with one another.
Sure.
So yeah, they might be friends outside of this campaign, but their characters interact on a different level with one another. So you can allow them to forge their own bonds in that way.
Yeah.
And then you'll have, you know, maybe your fighter and your wizard have very different worldviews. So they kind of have an antagonistic bond, but your rogue and your ranger are kind of similar in their worldview, so they become good friends, or, you know, romantically involved, or something like that. And you can have those kind of character-to-character relationships develop, and then, if the plot's relevant for one of them, it's relevant for the other, because
exactly.
They're already connected. They have forged
Absolutely.
This bond.
Absolutely, and you'll find that, or at least in my experience it's been, that things that connect characters, and that drive stories, and allow you to really have more control over the reins of what's going on, it's not that, you know, oh, we were in this big fight and we won and therefore we were bonded in war. It was that, like, after it was over, you two had a huge fight about it. And those players will never forget that moment where, like, everyone was quiet while, like, 2 or 3 people had a really vicious argument about, I mean, this happened with us.
Yeah, I was just about to say, let's get specific. This is my character right here.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it.
No, this is fine. I'm comfortable with this. I'm sure that our friend who's playing Bucky, the fighter, won't mind either. This is the thing. My character is a Warforged rogue named Pawn, and he is he's a good dude. He's very altruistic. He wants to see the good in every person.
Yeah.
So he doesn't necessarily write the world off as black and white, good versus evil, based on what's established in the Monster Manual. And I don't know if you guys...
Which he knows nothing about.
Which I know nothing about. I don't know if you guys can tell. I might still be a little salty about this. But me and Bucky got in an argument over the treatment of a sea hag we encountered, and in my character's mind, we could have used this person as an ally. We were starting to open up a dialogue with them, so the idea was, alright, this person's not inherently our enemy because they're willing to talk to us, whereas Bucky's saw it as, this is an evil being. And, I mean, it was true. She was an evil being, and that's totally fair.
The book says evil.
And she was also doing evil things. I was just purposely kind of ignoring those things. But, like, Bucky saw her as an evil entity on the planet that needs to be destroyed.
Yep.
And so he pretty viciously...
It was savage. I mean, it was borderline torture.
Yeah, but, I mean, and that's where you get... And that's the thing, it's character-wise and player-wise, it's different. I see... I don't see an evil act done in the name as of good as a good act,
sure.
Regardless of if I'm, you know, me in real life, or if I'm playing Pawn or one of my other characters. That's kind of something that I consistently use, is the idea that the world is more of a gray area, where, you know, Bucky is more black and white, and that's the character he's playing, and he's playing it really well, and it got to the point where him and I got in a pretty contentious argument, and... myself and one of the other players split from the party and wandered off alone in some dangerous areas.
Yeah.
And I mean, it all worked out in the end.
Right, but...
but, like, we had an argument in real life and in character.
Right.
And I loved it. I thought the conflict was great. I thought it was cool character building.
It fueled so much drama.
Yeah.
Like, good drama, not, like, bad drama. Good usable narrative drama. Within the story about, you know, Scott and the other player had made a secret alliance with a different hag and were, like, trying to get her through the party, and it was, like, a big mess, and there kept being all these knots they had to come over, and there was no, like, skill check involved. It was all narrative stuff, and it was so based on the core concepts of the characters they had built, and all I had to do was sit there and watch them have this fight and go, I'm not going to stop you. And it was frustrating. And as a DM trying to keep a game together, it was actually a little frightening, to be honest. But at the end of the day, it really resulted in, like, a really interesting opportunity for everybody to not only really utilize the characters they had built, that they were really interested in developing, but also a way to develop the relationships between the characters that in the future I get to use. I know how you two interact about this thing now, and I know who allied with you, and I know who allied with Bucky, and one of the players stayed in the middle and remained neutral about it, but still kind of stayed with Bucky. And I'll know that, and I'll know that in pairings there's going to be inherent conflict, and Dungeons & Dragons gives the sense that it's all about the adventuring and the jumping and the sword play and the spell casting, but a lot of the fun really comes from the role-playing, and these backstories are so critical to... I mean, the fighting, the combat, the mechanics, that's all the skeleton, and it's really important, but this stuff is the meat that people really get invested in.
This is what makes the game fun, and it's also what makes the game unique party to party. It's what makes each campaign different and fun, and I will say that, you know, you sat back and you said you were frightened and worried about the future of our campaign after that. And that's kind of, as a GM or DM, that's kind of your role to step in and cool the human beings outside of the game's tempers. And at the end of the day, Bucky and I were both, or the person who plays Bucky and I are both experienced enough players that we can set aside, you know, character arguments. And yeah, it got a little heated between us that day, but, you know, I still love you, Brandon, and we're still good. Like, that's the thing, is we were able to, the next time we played, set it aside, and also, like, when a similar situation arose again, Bucky was now, as a character, more open to Pawn's perspective on it, and it ended up, you know,
that's
ending
true.
A lot more peacefully, much to my character's joy, than it would have previously.
Yeah, it was really interesting, and I think that at least in my group, in our group, and I knew beforehand that everyone was more interested, or at least the majority were more interested in a very narrative heavy game, that this was going to be the kind of stuff that really kept it going. And so when I asked them for detailed backstories, I knew it would be helpful. I didn't even really fathom how useful it would be for me to keep the game going. I mean, it is so critical. I know where you came from, what you're doing, and why. Because it's like, yeah, I mean, you know, yes, if you're in mortal danger, you're compelled to do things. But if your personal journey is at stake, I could run you through hoops of fire. I mean, I could get you to do anything. And it's pretty powerful, and I think it's a tool that is worth knowing, and it's worth using, and it's it cannot be underestimated enough how much those character backstories have been essential in the longevity of the game so far. Not that it's been that long, but the games we run tend to be longer, so I mean, I need to know this kind of stuff, because especially not knowing what you're going to do, where you want to go, and how you're going to accomplish it, it's at least useful for me to know that, well, if I put this kind of moral obstacle in the way, half the party is going to dip out, and then it's a problem for everybody else, and then what are they going to do? And then if I put this in the way, well, 3 out of 4 people don't want to be a part of that, or they are fine with it, and this one person has to, like, convince a bunch of other adamant people to do something, and that lets people get their teeth in the game, and that's very interesting for a lot of people. Not that this is a tremendous transition.
Oh!
But this is the roleplay side of it.
Yes.
There's the mechanical side of it. And I know when I talk to people about the game, playing or DMing, they're fine with it pretty much until they see the size of the rule books, and then they leave.
You're right, that was a wonderful transition into our next section, which is going to be on... You don't need to know all the rules to play the game.
No, you
don't. So, I will say that as a person who fits this role in almost every single party I've been a part of, being a rules lawyer is something that is unique to a very specific kind of nerd like myself, who will read every book cover to cover, regardless of how much of a slog it is through the minutia of the rules, but like reading cover to cover, knowing every single rule, and yes, I still have to reference the book all the time, but I have a lot of D&D mechanics permanently ingrained in my brain that are just taking up space for, like, other things I might be able to learn, like, I don't know, maybe my future children's names or something like that, but, like, it's ingrained in there forever. And so, if you have a person like that in your campaign, that's great. If you have a person like me who will be like, oh, this is how you do a grapple check. This is how you figure out the spell effects for this kind of spell, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's great if you have that person. If you don't, one of the wonderful things about pen and paper role-playing that makes it better than video games, that makes it better than, you know, a regular board game, is that, like, the rules for partially, well, some of the rules are optional. Like, you can cut out certain things that don't make sense to your game style,
sure,
and you can ignore certain rules. Like, in D&D, they go really in-depth, and they do a wonderful job of building, like, an entire fully flushed-out system. But there are aspects of that game system that we have never paid attention to, and that we'll never use. Like, I don't know if any of my characters have ever had a meal, except for narratively, in their entire
history. I have never seen a spellcaster use material components.
Oh my god, why did they do material components? It makes no sense!
Well, I think the thing is it mitigates power, and that's a long-running problem with the game, is mitigating power, so it's just a mechanic people aren't using, but I think at the end of the day it's important to remember that Wizards of the Coast has a game, and they're trying to appeal to the widest audience. And what that means is you have to appeal to, in this case, kind of the highest, it's the lowest common denominator, I suppose, but it's like the highest level of play possible. So it's you know, there's rules in that book for really minute details, like disease and gestation time of disease and hunger and the problems with hunger and weather conditions and warmth and all these little things that I have never found interesting to use, but theoretically they're interesting to somebody. And so they put all these rules in so that the person who wants them has them. But for everybody else, you get to just say, like, you set up camp, you're warm enough, you sleep the night.
Yeah.
And I think that part is kind of easy to understand for a lot of players. You're like, well, I just don't feel like doing disease. And
keeping track of food and water
levels. Yeah, I don't
levels.
Really want to deal with how many hours of sleep you got, unless there's like a reason that 8 hours would be detrimental because you overslept or something. But they seem less inclined to, and I'm definitely somebody who does this because I think, well, it's a rule in the book. It's all part of the balance. How can I get rid of it? But they're very inclined to say that I need it. I need all of these numbers. I need all of these spells. I need to know all of this stuff. All these health points matter. The levels matter. All of these things really matter. And at the end of the day, they do in a general sense. I mean, you want to know ahead of time if something is going to eliminate the party in two turns. I mean, you do want to know that.
Mm.
Not that you still might not use it, but you want to know that kind of stuff. But the amount of times that I have said, it's too many health points, you're getting less health points. Or you have too few moves, you're getting more moves. You're one enemy, you get three attacks this turn because it's a party that's this big. And all these things, and you know, rules about traps, and like you said, grappling, and all these little esoteric pieces of mechanical combat and interaction. You know, it's good to know, and it's, you know, it's a blessing to have somebody like Scott who knows it offhand. But, you know, a lot of players just want to do it and know if they succeeded or not. And so if all you really at the end of the day say is like, all right, you know, it's going to be a strength check for strength check, highest number wins. You know, I mean, if that's all that is, and that's not the mechanical way to do it, it doesn't really matter. You get the same effect, it's faster, which is sometimes better, and your player gets to know if what they did succeeded or not.
Well, and that's the thing, is in regards to the rule, in D&D, the way I kind of look at the dice is they represent fate. So the idea is you try to accomplish... You're telling this narrative, your characters are also telling this narrative, you're working together to tell this story, and they're choosing the character's actions. And the only reason the dice exist is so that they don't succeed on everything. So it's fate. It's the chance that they won't be able to, you know, grapple check and wrestle that guard to the ground before he goes shouting for his comrades, or the chance they'll be able to convince that merchant to part with the very rare artifact they need for their quest or whatever. But it's with those dice rolls, that's all it should be. The game should not be a math simulator. It should not be like, you know, everyone pull out their calculators and find out how to make the math and probability work so I say yes to you the most times. It should be more of, we're going to tell this story and we need consequences and the possibility of failure. That's where the dice comes in. So the
right.
rules are, you know, great and necessary and really helpful for doing that, but like, sometimes you gotta fudge the numbers,
yeah.
And like, sometimes the narrative takes precedent over the rules of the game.
Yeah, I mean, for me, most of the time, the narrative takes precedent over the rules. I mean, I really find that the rules can be very frustrating because they're all chance-based. And even somebody who's very good at something can just totally botch it. They just get 15 ones in a row and there's nothing you can do about it. And that's really where the DM magic stuff comes in. And DM magic is, how would you define it?
I mean, it's technically a term, I don't know if it's like a real term, it's definitely something that we refer to as, DM magic is lying to your players. It is when they roll and they succeeded and you wanted them to fail, or vice versa, or you rolled and you failed and wanted to succeed, and you tell them the opposite of the truth.
Yeah, or it's you know, people call it fudging the numbers.
Yeah,
you know, things like that, and it's about, like you said, like the narrative taking precedent over the mechanical outcome, because
yes.
this is the one place where like the DM as God thing actually has some applicability, because
mm-hmm.
in this case you get to say like, well, my players have been having like a really horrible time of the roles, they've just been getting plain unlucky in a way that they shouldn't, and I'm going to say that they, you know, they luck out in this case. Or the effect that could have been really bad, it just isn't as bad as they thought. You know, somebody's climbing up a wall, and they totally screw their sneak check. And you say, like, well, you know, I could have this guard just scream alarm and have everybody in the whole keep say, you know, get to this wall, there's intruders. Or, you know, you say, you failed it pretty bad, but you lucked out. There was really only one guard up there, and they're new, and they're nervous, and... You know, that means a lot to the players.
And that brings up a good point with the, you know, giving your characters a break. That's the point of DM magic. That is the point of, you know, being able to fudge the numbers. It's not to be like, I've played in campaigns where the DM, and this is a very Dungeons & Dragons 3.5 edition kind of mindset, the dungeon master wants to kill every single character that gets placed in front of them. So they lie, they alter numbers, or make the challenge rating so high that it's impossible to, you know, succeed for these characters because the dungeon master wants them to fail. And that's super fucking lame. And, like, that's not something that's fun for anyone. And, well, there are people that love it.
There are people.
I mean, the Tomb of Horrors exists for a reason, and people really, really like it.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but people really, really like it.
Yeah.
And I guess it's that whole, you know, challenge of, like, overcoming it kind of thing, but that's not as much fun to me as, like, playing the story. So when I say, you know, you can lie to your players, it's mostly, like, this is where the narrative was going, this is what needed to happen, and just because of this one goddamn die roll, where the whole story is just going to be kaput.
Yeah.
And, like, it's important to not drop yourself into that kind of corner, but if it does happen, that's when DM Magic's your best friend. That's when you can go ahead and just be like, okay, you rolled a 3, but, you know, the guy has an ear infection, so I still didn't hear you. I don't know, what do you want from me?
Yeah, sometimes that's the case, but it's also important, to remember that you can't, there's going to be times when you can't do it, and you have to account for that more. You can't say, like, oh, at any time I want, I'll just make the number different, because I don't know how many people still play with, like, screens in front of them, but in our group, and in any game I've really seen, the players usually roll their own die, they roll them right out on the table. So
does the DM.
So does the DM.
I mean, that's how we play it. I know the screen is a thing, but
a lot of people play just out on the open in the table. And so, you know, if your player's been keeping track of how high they have to, you know, get to hit something, and you roll 12 below that, they're never going to believe they hit it. And likewise, if they know something beat their armor class, and you say it didn't, they're never going to buy it, but there's little ways around it. You know, you say it wasn't a killing blow, or you say they chose to do something else. Or you throw them off a tower instead of stabbing them right there on the floor, and it gives them an opportunity to recover, to survive. You have to decide, and, you know, player death's a whole other topic we'll get into at time. But
later,
that's,
but, like, but yeah. And that's the thing, is, like, when I say I don't use a DM screen, I still lie to my characters' faces about my roles. And that's the thing, is it establishes that, like, sure, this might be the number that showed up on the dice, but that might not be the number I said that happened. And if that, you know, I mean, I don't do it a lot. I do it very rarely, because otherwise it's what's the point of the dice.
Yeah.
And there has to be consequences for these actions. There has to be the possibility of failure, and there has to be consequences. Sometimes your party is going to fail.
Yeah.
But, like, when it's just, it's not doable. When the whole story is going to just die because of this one failure, that's when I will, like, look the character straight in the eye and lie to their face.
Right.
With a smile, and then they know, alright, Scott, you are doing me a favor here, because you still want to play this game and you don't want it to end tonight right now.
Yeah. So, what about things like balance issues? I know that's something that comes up a lot, balance issues. I also know that people, we found out that it's very common for people to use pre-made campaigns and like the lore that Wizards of the Coast has set out. That's not something we really do, and not something we've ever really done. Balance things we've come across a lot, because we've done a lot of homebrewing.
Oh my gosh. The steampunk reskin debacle of 3.5 right when I started DMing. This is the second campaign I had ever touched in my life as a dungeon master, and I decided I wanted to reskin the entirety of 3.5 edition into a steampunk alternate world where magic did not exist. So I eliminated magic, I reskinned all the weapons, all the character classes, I did all of this work, and it did not function.
Well, I remember very clearly my character, the first thing that happened is we were on a ship. We got boarded, and within 2 turns, my character got, like, blasted in the forehead and died. And I was like, okay, I'll see you guys next week.
Yeah.
It got messy. And that was a balance issue. It was a huge balance issue. I mean, partially, guns have never functioned amazingly well in this game.
It's a melee-based system. It's not very great for range.
But the balance can be tricky, especially when you're new and you're not... You know, you look at a number in the monster manual. You look at a challenge rating of this. You look at an armor class of this. You look at how many attacks something has and plus what. And you don't really know what that means. I mean, like, you can get that an average of 5 is higher than an average of 2.
Yeah.
But you don't really have any concept of what that's going to look like on paper, and it can be very tricky, especially when your players, you know, you want them to be excited about what they make, and sometimes they want to make crazy things. And you say, like, well, I guess it doesn't sound that bad on paper, and you play it, and you're like, oh my god, you're like an 8-arm murder machine. I can't stop you. I'd have to throw like a storm giant in your way and maybe you would die.
Exactly. And so that's when, you know, the rules are important. Wizards has a massive team of incredibly talented people who have balanced and retested and remade and retweaked and balanced this game. Oh my god. Excuse me, that was a really embarrassing sneeze. and balance this game to the point where, like, it makes sense and it works. But it's a hard kind of gray area, which is why if you're very new to the game and this is your first campaign, I always recommend sticking to what they have. Yeah. Sticking to the rules they've established, and then as you become more experienced and more seasoned, you can go ahead and start creating your own ideas, creating your own things. Now, that being said, again, Wizards of the Coast has a wonderful team of incredibly talented and creative people who've created a massively in-depth world and lore and multiple planes of existence and stories and characters existing in, you know, the Dungeons & Dragons canon.
Yeah, there's a huge amount of content there. I mean, everything from the manuals to there's just novels they write.
Video games. Movies.
Like, card games, articles, I mean, it's stretching back into the 70s. I mean, if you want to find something, it probably exists. But...
That being said, I've never used a single ounce of it.
Right, and we recently tried because we wanted to run something, but I didn't feel like writing a whole new campaign. We tried to run a pre-made, and I just had a horrible time. I was the DM, and I... found it, like, endlessly frustrating. I thought the story hooks were, like, impossible to implement. The players were, you know, you were nice to me. And you did what you were supposed to do, but you really had to do what you were supposed to do. And especially coming from a game like ours, which is, like, fairly freeform, it was tough to even come up with a reason why you would do these things. The campaign modules that Wizards produces are still very based in old D&D. And old D&D, you know... Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, 2nd edition, there was still a lot of... The DM tells you what to do, and you do it. You go to this dungeon because what else would you do? And it's very linear. And this was an attempt to widen the scope. There were options of what you could do in what order. But at the end of the day, I was reading it going, I don't know why they would ever go near this thing. There's no reason for them to do this. And so many times they were pointing out, like, I'm not going near that person. Are you kidding me? There's so many better ways to approach this problem than just running in the front door.
And that's why D&D is so great, is because, you know, like, when you're playing a fantasy video game, you have the option to... You normally have a couple class options, and you can approach the problems in a few set ways. Dungeons & Dragons, you can do whatever you want. And if you're having trouble creating a narrative and creating a story, that's something we're going to explain more in a later episode, but if, you know, on a base level, you just can't think of an interesting enough story and world, that's what the canon is there for. That's what those, you know, pre-made modules are great for, is you have a setting built, you have a world built, you have an entire multi-dimensional, multi-planner setting established already for your campaign that you can use. You do not have to do as much work as, you know, Ben or myself does for your campaigns.
Yeah.
I mean, like, every campaign, I end up creating a new pantheon of gods, a new planner system, I draw up entirely new maps of continents and worlds and countries and stuff. And it's all superfluous, because, like, it all exists. They have everything you could want and desire in a story already established for you in the D&D canon, and it's great to use, but it's not necessary.
Yeah, and also it can just be, when you're new, it can be overwhelming to look at. I don't do nearly that level of planning that Scott does, in terms of, like, you know, gods, planar systems, you know, like, there's, like, a whole astrology system, there's insane detail, maps, I mean, tons of maps, and that's not what I excel at. I'm much more focused on, like, the character-driven narrative. I do a lot of work on the very small scale, this is the plot, these are the intricacies of the plot, this is what I want to have prepared, and then moving forward and sort of estimating and predicting what the players will do and think. And for me, it's, you know, you look at the cosmology of, like, Dungeons & Dragons, and it's so big, and it's been going on for so long that you just go, like, what do I even do with this? I mean, you know, this campaign that I've purchased, in many cases, I don't even know what any of these things mean. I don't know who these people are. And the truth is, you don't have to. But you say, like, well, you know, if you break it down to base components, there's a town under siege, and this is the person responsible, and here's why. And you can use that setting, you can use that aesthetic, you can use that premise, and just go, well, I don't like that reason why they did that. I'm going to make it this. And I don't really like that they're, you know, in this moral area. I'm going to make them this. And I'm going to make this town actually bigger or smaller or in the air or upside down. You know, it doesn't really matter. I mean, you know, like, you know, Chris Perkins isn't going to come and, like, slap your face off if you ruin his books. It's not really like that. So if you're struggling to come up with enough material, and you're just like, I just don't know what it would look like, I don't know who would be there, I don't know why, those books are a great resource for reference. I personally don't like running the campaigns as they are. I find them a little stock, a little dry. Some people really dig that. I find that a lot of older players seem to dig that more than we do. People who've been playing a long time and are much more used to the linear fashion, the very, very goal-oriented style of play. But it's there for you. It's worth looking at. I mean, and to that point, any kind of media you consume that you like, just make that your campaign.
Well, exactly. Like, I mean, if I'm going to put you on blast for a second here...
Yeah, what's up? Do
it. The current campaign you're running is the plot of Men in Black.
It is the plot of Men in Black.
which has been endlessly fun, and it's fantastic. Yeah. Men in Black in a fantasy setting is great.
That's what it is.
And that's the thing, is you can take anything you're particularly fond of or anything you love. I know in my campaigns, I use ideas I got from all sorts of fantasy books, because, you know, I read altogether too many fantasy books. And, like, even small ideas and small aspects of things that you enjoy from a particular video game, particular movie, particular anime, particular book series or graphic novel or manga or whatever, like, you find it and you're like, well, this is something that interests me, this is something that's cool, you can use that as your narrative focus, because, I mean, regardless of copyright levels, you're running this for your friends in your basement, like, it doesn't matter if you use that, no one's gonna get mad at you.
It doesn't, and I mean, you know, there's always the concern, and I definitely had this concern, and it even arose when we started playing, where, you know, one of the players was like, oh, it's Men in Black, and I was like, is that like an insult? Because I said, yes, it is, and I thought, like, yeah, I mean, it sounds kind of silly in the outset, but it's a premise everybody understands. There's a lot of good features. There's, like, a hub. There's a lot of people. There's a large-scale, organization with a goal. There's a lot of things that work here, and all I have to do is just say, you know, you don't run the exact same missions they did in the movies. You run other kinds, but from a similar sort of standpoint. And it, like, does it matter? Initially somebody goes, like, are we playing Men in Black? But then they just go, this is just the game we're running. You know, as long as it's not identical, no one really cares. And if you have somebody who really cares, they're being a dick.
Yeah.
You know?
And, I mean, you might have a certain character start quoting Will Smith as much as he can
You might have one of those, you son of a bitch.
But, like, I mean, that's just fun. That just makes it more enjoyable. Because, like, there's this idea that, you know, certain campaigns are serious and certain are goofy, and you have to have, like, you have to pick one, and I don't think it's, like, I use a lot of, like, Lovecraftian inspired, like, horror and really visceral, disgusting descriptions in my campaign, but at the same time, I have characters that are voiced in the most ridiculous accents that you can't take them seriously, and everyone laughs and makes fun of them. So you can go back and forth. You can have both of them. Like, you can have what's mostly a comedy movie, i.e. Men in Black, as mm-hmm. your basis for your campaign,
that's right.
and then have a really, really dramatic kind of moment between two characters where they question morality in
yeah.
a general sense that's not funny at all.
No, it wasn't. It was actually, like I said, it was pretty horrifying in minus, and I think I just ended the game with this. I really thought I'd screwed everything up, but it turned out to be, you know, an incredible sort of midsection. You know, middles of plots are hard, and this was like a great middle section, and I said, you know, embrace that, use that. And lastly, I mean, I think as a DM, the title gives you a certain belief. The DM. I'm the DM. I'm a DM. I am DMing the game. It's very singular. You think it's me, doing this, and I don't want my players to know what's coming. I don't want them to know what I have planned. And you really have to be willing to ask for help. If you have somebody outside of the game who's very experienced, that's terrific, because you just ask them and there's no consequence. You know, you say, does this sound good? Does this sound like something that'll work? Will my players enjoy this? Is this going to be a mechanical nightmare? And if they're not playing the game, but they know the game, they say yes, no, maybe, could be, we could want to test it with me. And then there's really no consequence. So that's a great resource. But for me, everybody who knows the game that I play with, and especially Scott, who knows the game the best out of all of us, I have to bring things to him and hope he doesn't use them against me later, which he's been very good about. And, you know, some players will be, some players won't be so good about, and you have to know who your friends are in that regard. But be willing to say, like, man, I just don't have an idea for this. I don't know how this is going to work. I have no idea how to make this long enough. It's too long. Who is the villain? Why? How do I get you there? And just ask people. And you know what? Ask your players.
Well, because that's the thing, is like, the idea of metagaming, of mixing your knowledge as a real-life human being with your character's knowledge, is something that, you know, most people who play the game are familiar with. It's something you want to avoid, and not in a sense of like, oh, it's against the rules, but more like, it ruins the game in the sense of pulling you out of the immersion. It makes it so you're no longer playing your character. You're not acting as your character, you're acting as you controlling your character. You turn your character
yeah.
into a puppet, which is not fun.
Yeah.
So, like, I know some certain crucial information about Ben's campaign.
Yeah.
And recently, there was a time where one of the other players had a dream, and that information came up. But my character had no way of knowing that's what happened in the dream, so I could not speak
yeah.
about it.
And I thought it was going to kill him.
And it almost did. That was really, really hard. And so that's the kind of thing where if you have players that are on board to create this fun, cool story, you can be a little more open with them
yeah.
as long as, you know, it's accepted that they won't metagame. And that's something that a DM does coach. If a player is clearly using knowledge they have of the fact they're playing a game to influence their character's decisions, you can call them out and just be like, why would your character do that? Like, if, you know, your character is walking down a wooded glen and, you know, nothing's going wrong, and they roll a perception check and they roll a 2, so they don't see anything, if all of a sudden they drop into combat stance, that's metagaming. Because their
yeah.
character rolled a 2. Their character thought nothing was wrong. They saw nothing.
Oh, sure.
So you have to call them out on that, and you have to
yeah.
keep them in line, because otherwise it's, I mean, like, in the weirdest possible way, it's cheating.
Yeah.
Because you are playing a game.
You are playing a game, and that is a risk you just run when you have to ask your players about opinions and, you know, what do you think should happen next? Because they'll know. And then you sit there and you go, but if they know, they're just gonna, like, they're gonna overrun me. They'll know what's happening, they'll prepare for everything, they'll constantly be running checks, they'll do all these crazy things that I can't really do anything about. And more than anything else, in that case, you have to kind of hope your friends will play fair. Your players will play fair. That takes a lot of hope, a lot of trust.
It's trust.
It's difficult, but, you know, if you don't have somebody outside the game, or you're not really willing to go on a forum or something, you're left with that. But it can be powerful, because, again, it's a very directive question. The people who are going to be affected are the people who are going to be giving the opinion. And again, you'll know what they want and what their plans are. And that's just as valuable for you to know as it is, you know, you give up a little when you tell them, but you gain a lot in the learning from it.
Well, and I mean, worst case scenario, you could always ask us. You could send us an email at dungeoncasterspodcast@gmail.com, or you could tweet at us at our Twitter it's dungeon_casters.
Yeah, we just made it, so we're not familiar with it. We'll put a picture up soon.
We might. So yeah, ask us, and maybe we'll even answer your question on the show. How cool would that be?
That'd be so cool. I'd be so excited. I'm going to ask a question so that I can answer my own question.
Ah, that's kind of, that's like Inception-y deep there.
It's a bad idea.
Hey. hey, Ben.
Yeah.
Hey, Ben.
Yeah.
What do you get when you make an archer angry?
I don't know, Scott. What do you get?
A crossbowman.
Oh my.